I'm Josh.
And I'm Christy. You know, we all have family picture frames. Frames that reflect the people who bring us the most joy, but also the people who can bring us the most frustration.
Yet, no matter what, the people in those frames have your back, and you have theirs. Regardless of who's in your frame, you're in it together. They are your legacy.
Welcome to the In This Together podcast, where we go behind the scenes to share stories from our own crooked picture frame.
And interview guests to discover how their stories can give us insight on becoming families who live, love, and lead well.
Because you're not alone. We're all in this together. Today's podcast is brought to you by 22-6 Parenting, an online community designed to help you disciple your kids to live, love, and lead well. Check it out at 226parenting.com.
So excited that you've joined us today. We have an amazing couple with us, and we cannot wait to...
I thought we were speaking.
Well, I want to introduce them to you. This is Rodney and Selma Wilson, and what's great about them is they are grandparents, and also ministry leaders. And that's the cool part, is they've raised their kids in ministry and but Rodney, you're a pastoral counselor.
So
you got to see, I mean, we've got decades of experience from counseling and also parenting. And so we're going to dive in. And then Selma, you are, I love your title. It's the coolest title in the world.
I love it.
It is Chief People Officer and Vice President of Organizational Development.
I like
of Lifeway.
The first part. That's awesome.
Isn't that awesome? Officer. I love it. I kind of laugh and say, I have Native American Indian in my heritage, and I finally got the chiefdom, you know, just chief. So cool. I love it.
So what does it mean? What does a Chief People Officer
do? It really is about people strategy. And organizations now are understanding it. You've got to be intentional about the development of people and culture. And just to focus on people and all that it means in a changing time to invest in people, to think people first. And I just have a bent for people, love people, and just so it really just evolved in the organization. But I'm a people advocate, and I just have a deep love for people and helping people succeed and find their giftedness and be in that sweet spot that God's designed them to be in. So God has a sense of humor.
Speaking of that, you also, I think it's in your bio, it says you're a cheerleader of moms.
Yes.
Or a cheerleader for moms.
Oh
my gosh, so. I love that so much. That's what I say. I just love to cheer people on.
Yes.
You want to be my cheerleader?
We'll form a cheerleading squad.
Yes.
And moms need cheerleaders. And I love to cheer moms on, to tell them, they can do this and they can be successful and they don't have to give up themselves and their giftedness in the middle of it. That all of that package of motherhood is beautiful and wonderful through the seasons of life. And it is. I'm still a mom at 60 and love the new role of mom with adult daughters parenting their own children. So we'll have a little squad.
Can we just hang out? Like,
yes. We'll do coffee on a regular basis.
Yes. I would love that.
I want to dive in, start by asking you, Ronnie, let's go back to the beginning. Tell me a little bit about how you guys met, or tell me a funny story of whether it's a great first date story, whether it's a proposal. Tell me, give us a little bit of an idea, because we don't even know. And so for the audience listening, tell us your story.
Sure. Well, first of all, Josh, it's a joy and an honor to be with you and Christy today. It really, really is. I will be your encourager. I don't think I'll be your cheerleader, though, okay?
Okay.
We won't have a cheerleading
we'll
camp together.
Tights, right?
No pom-poms.
Thank you.
Okay.
No, it was pretty scandalous, the way someone I met.
It was.
I was a youth, there's the term way back when, long, long time ago, was youth minister. No, you even go back further than that. I was youth director at her church.
Now let me just say this, because you guys have been married, is that right, 39 years?
40 years.
40
then.
Years.
Yes. Wow.
Congratulations. Yeah, yeah. So, and so you're listening in. Listen to these people, because they're the example.
Yeah.
This is the table we want to be at, honestly, 30 years from now.
Yeah, come on, pile some pressure on us.
No,
good.
But,
okay.
No, we want you there. We want you there too.
Truly.
And every couple listening.
No, I was 19 years old, 20 years old, and at her little country church, finished up my last 2 years at school at UT Chattanooga, and weekends, Wednesday nights, those kinds of things. And I was her youth director, and we worked together. She's a couple of years younger than me, and so we worked together for like a year, and then we started dating the second year.
Yes,
and
very scandalous.
Took it. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
It was.
But the whole church embraced it, and we were very fortunate in that regard, because I wouldn't advise anybody to date somebody in their youth group, but it happened, and 40 years later, we're still seeing if it'll work out, you know. So.
It was awesome.
But we did have the blessing of the church.
Two weeks after marriage, we were off to seminary, and it's just been a marriage ministry for 40 plus years, and still going strong. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. But it was a fun time as we kind of snuck around and dated.
our first date was official date. It was on my 21st birthday, and I took her to an Atlanta Braves game. And I was very disappointed because at the bottom of the ninth inning, Orlando Cepeda hit a home run, the Braves won, and I wanted to go into extra innings so this date could last longer. You know? But it was good.
It's great.
That's an amazing first date.
So you guys started out really in seminary.
We did.
In marriage. So when did the girls come along? You have two daughters. When did they come?
7 years after marriage. Yeah, we were in school for the first, Rodney.
4 or 5 years, yeah.
Finishing seminary, me finishing undergraduate program. And so we were getting settled into ministry. So 7 years is when our first child came. And Rodney, I love how you talk about a whole nother level of marriage had to take place after the kids came.
It was, yeah. There was a lot of adjustment there. I thought I knew this woman, been married to her for 7 years. But then like a year and a half, 2 years later, when our first one started growing up and needed disciplining, then all of a sudden this farmer's daughter, country girl, and my wife started coming out, and her background, and my city slicker started coming out. And so the marrying had to continue. We had to continue to adjust like 8, 9, 10 years into our marriage. You know? So it's, you know, as all parents do, they have to adjust because, you know, you're too lenient, you're too strict or whatever. You have to adjust that and work that out. And so, but that was kind of a surprise for us because we'd been married for a long time before we had our first.
It was wonderful. Yeah. It was great.
Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you saw like maybe the real person
under there.
All of a sudden,
where did that come from?
So tell me a little bit about that. So what is a city slicker parent?
Yes.
How is that different than the country girl?
Not too much, really, because you dig a little bit deeper. My mom and dad were both raised on farms as well, so it's kind of a rural kind of situation. But there was just times when one would be a little bit looser and let something slide. I think, no, we can't do that. Yes, we can.
Okay,
no,
so
we can.
you were the disciplinarian, more so.
Yeah, perhaps so. I don't know. It just depended on the situation. Mm. And because sometimes she would be, the point is there would be differences, and we'd have to continue to marry, continue to adjust, to give and take, and okay, I guess we'll let this slide. And sometimes she'd say that, or sometimes, yeah, we need to get together on this, you know. And
it's almost like we talked about children, of course, from the beginning. We wanted children, mm-hmm. And we had a healthy marriage. We very open communication. But all of a sudden, you're in the middle of parenting. This is new. We read all the books. You know, mm-hmm. we did all the studying. But now you've got a 2-year-old throwing a temper tantrum. Yeah. What do you do with this? Yeah. And so the reality kicked in, and we had to kind of back up and regroup. How are we going to do this? You know, what's the game plan? What's the ground rules? And so we had to take our marriage to another level as these kids entered the world. And then baby number two, you've got other issues. And but that's one thing I think we learned, to be proactive, to plan ahead. You're in the middle of it, but you may need to step back and get some agreements on how you're going to parent. And we did that.
Yeah.
Now you're very successful. How did you, were you working at the time? Were you home with the girls? What did that look like at that time? Like, were you both working or?
It's a great question, Josh. We, up until children, I was a social worker. And Rodney was staff at a church. And we, through much prayer, made the decision for me to be at home. And it was an agreed upon decision. And so for 7 years, I was home with the girls. And, you know, that was our choice, and it's been a good choice for us. Mm-hmm. And now during that 7 years, I was still growing and, you know, a part of the ministry. But it really was, you know, there's a lot behind that. You know, but it was the plan that we had, and it was a wonderful plan. And one of the things I say to moms and to parenting goes by so fast. Mm-hmm. You guys are in the middle of that place, mm-hmm. and those early years, before you know it, they're up in school, and you know, it just flew by. And so for us, it worked. It was a commitment. You know, we had to make financial changes. We had to, you know, parenting changes and a lot of adjustments, but it was the right choice for us.
Someone once said that the in parenting, the days are long, but the years are swift. And I think that's very, very true. I look back and where did the time go? I can still remember when they were little and all that. But there were some long days in there. I do remember that as well. Third, fourth grade, night after night, having to dry two long heads of hair every single night, you know, over and over and over and everything. It's like got a little slow in there somewhere. But then it just picked up. And I think, wait a minute, where did it go?
You know. How did you guys, in the middle of that, so you're raising kids, you've started to see some differences. And I'm glad you're talking about that, because we don't have any idea what that's like.
Not a clue. I can't even relate.
We disagree on everything.
I think you put into words our experience almost exactly.
And the experience I think we see a lot of young families have today. It's no different than it was 30 years ago. I
mean, but how reassuring to hear that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Like it's
I want to go to the marriage piece just for a minute, because you guys have been married for 40 years. Yes. You're talking about the marital part when kids, post kids and that kind of thing. And then, so you talk a little bit about changing things financially, probably some financial pressures, those types of things. Just for those listening, what are some practical ways as you think back that really, in the spirit of Ecclesiastes 9:9, right? Like to enjoy life with the one that you love, and to just, what were some practical ways that you guys chose to stay, or that you, I say chose because you're talking the word proactive, that you stayed connected with one another, that you really prioritized your marriage even in the midst of the chaos that was raising kids, you know?
She used a very significant word a moment ago in another context, but that's been her life in our marriage together, has been proactive. She looks ahead. You have to be intentional. The spending time in your marriage when you're raising two little ones and all the chaos and all the maintenance that's necessary there, it doesn't happen by default. You have to calendar it. You have to look, and you have to, and she would do that for our family as well. I know you're going to marriage, but she would do that for our family. Okay, guys, it's the first of the summer. Before our summer gets away, what do you want to do? You know, and we get it on the calendar, and calendar could be going to the ballpark to watch a ball game, you know, watch the Sounds, or watch, you know, or not anything huge necessarily, some of the biggies, but to calendar that. Same thing with our marriage. Okay, what are we going to do? What are we going to do for a date this month? You know, what's our date? And just to calendar that, or to be intentional in terms of keeping that on the radar is very, very important, because it's so easy to get lost from that.
Our girls knew from the time they were little, mom and dad had dates. It was normal. We made it happen. We got away, and you know, we just made a priority that we would have time together. I love that word, you know, the joy of life and the joy of marriage. We have that in Christ. But you do have to, time is your big issue, even more than money. You have got to guard your time, and if you don't plan for it, it's not going to happen. I mean, it really won't. Life will get in the way. And we just made it a priority. We would, when we didn't have much money, I remember, Rodney, the tennis can thing. Do you remember that?
We
would put all the loose coins in the tennis can. And when it was full, we counted it out. And every how much money we had, we would do a date together.
We'd take our $5.
So I remember one time it was $79 or something.
Yeah.
And we got an overnight in a hotel room. Yeah. It was amazing. Just getting away and having time where it's just me and him. I always tell couples, you don't want to lose the personal touch of your marriage. Rodney's Rodney. I loved him before he was father, and I don't want to lose him. I love it that he's a father. Now he's a grandfather, and he's the best ever. Sexiest grandpa I know. He is awesome.
Oh, so
appealing. Swinging those grandchildren on the swing. But he's Rodney. He's Rodney first, and he always will be to the end of our life together. And the man that I fell in love with, that I don't want to lose in life and marriage, that means time. That means looking eye to eye. We call that. You got to see each other. and really focus on each other, and you can make that happen.
And if you were in the studio right now, if you would see the way that Selma is looking at Rodney, you'd think they were teenagers in life.
Right.
Like, I want that in 40 years.
You can have that in 40 years.
Excuse me. We went on a special trip this fall to celebrate our 40th wedding anniversary, and we spent night after night at little restaurants here and there in Italy, and just
2 weeks together.
And the time just flew by, Josh. It just really, really did. Just like it did. And we talked about that, just like when we were engaged, when we were in first year, whatever. It would just, I can still kill 2 hours just dreaming with this girl. You know, I just absolutely love it, you know. Yeah. So anyway, it's a blessing.
And part of that, we would say to all young couples that have children and are experiencing the demands, don't lose each other.
Yeah.
Don't lose it. God gives us children to let them go. We steward them, but we don't own them. God has the plans for them. And from the beginning, you need to really know and talk about letting them go. And you will be together until one of you dies, until God calls you home. Mm-hmm. You're the permanent thing, the marriage is.
That's such a great word.
And what we've invested along the way in the midst of the craziness of raising kids is what we have left.
That's
when the nest empties, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it is important. It's essential. Excuse me, Chris.
No, it's exactly. We have marriage mentors of ours who say the exact same thing. They'll say, your kids will wait, but your marriage won't.
Cool.
Great.
And
great
I think
words.
That's been a great principle that we learned early on, I think, which has really been helpful because we had some, we're still in them, I guess, but really rocky years from children.
Yes.
Before that, we thought we were actually pretty good at this marriage thing until they came along.
Oh.
And I didn't see how sinful my heart really was until we had kids either.
You want to talk about spiritual transformation? Children. Yeah. Children. Selfish, 24/7.
Yes.
I mean, oh my.
It's crazy. And we see a lot today. We see where marriages are not healthy, kids become the priority. And when the kids become the priority in the home, the priorities are mixed up. And I mean, it really does need to be God, marriage, and children.
Absolutely.
In order for you to really have a solid foundation in your home.
Yes.
And you guys are examples of that. It's amazing.
As we meet with and speak to parents from all over, the consistent frustration in the home continues to be around one topic, screens.
We believe becoming digital mentors to our kids is the answer.
And we finally found what we consider to be the best parental control product on the market to help you do just that. It's called Forcefield.
Yeah, we like it for three reasons. First, it's very family friendly. It's not spyware, so the kids are part of the conversation right from installation. So it's not about turning parents into spies, but instead puts kids and parents into a conversation about responsible online behavior.
Second, it's very easy to use. In fact, it's so easy that Forcefield doesn't even have an installation or user guide. It's that easy.
And third, it gives you everything you need. It shows you all the websites your kids are browsing. It lets you turn off apps during homework or sleep time. And it also shows you copies of the photos they're sharing on social media. So you can see and manage all of this right from your own phone.
It's called Forcefield. Go to josh.forcefield.me and try it for free for 30 days.
I just want to ask this question too, because and we'll kind of switch even from the marriage part to the parenting part. I want to get into grandparenthood with you guys as well. And just feel free to share as you do. Don't necessarily allow me to guide it. But I was thinking about the parenting route. Are there things, because now your daughters, so tell me the age of your grandchildren.
Yes, you guys have a six-year-old grandson and two that will be turning three, one in April and one in May. And then we have another one that's due in August. So, yay.
Congratulations.
So, it's wonderful. It is absolutely a joy.
This is a
wonderful season.
So, what do you see then with your daughters raising and son-in-laws with raising kids today where we are? I mean, you're basically our parents. So, hey, mom and dad.
Yes.
And what you guys experienced. And you're a pastoral counselor. So, even from the counseling side of this, you think you have got a unique insight into this as well, not just as a dad and a grandfather, but also as a counselor. What are some things you guys see that's different?
Well,
there's so much. You know, definitely the social media thing. I mean, our grandchildren can pick up my iPhone and they can find their little shows on YouTube for kids.
Our two-year-olds can.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so the whole technology thing, both good and bad, for engaging as families and putting those things down to be family and communicate together. So I think that's an issue. There's a lot of pressure on families today that you see, especially as it relates to our values. So there's challenges, you know, gender issues and transgender issues and things like that that families have to grapple with in new ways today. Yeah. And you know, but a lot of the issues are the same. And so yeah. even though it's a new time and place, the fundamentals are the same for, you know, what we see in Scripture and how families are to do life and faith together. Time is still the number one issue, yeah. I think. You know, you could say today there's more distractions in time. People's lives are full and busy. I laugh and say, hasn't technology given us more time? No. It is really it's taking more time. So the demands on family to have time together has never been greater than today. And a lot of it's good things. Sports, great thing, but it will take up time. Yeah. Church, great thing, but it takes up time. So that battle for priority is still a number one issue.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the issues are very similar, but the age-old principle is that connection with family doesn't happen by default. Like I said, it's just not a natural yes. kind of a thing for it to happen. The more distractions, the technology is incredible today. And we've always had, I mean, way back when I was, we had our record players. We could go off and be by ourselves, you know, and all those kinds of things. Boy, did I just date myself. I'm 100 years old now. but the cell phones and the videos and everything else today, we can be in the room right here and all four of us be in four completely different worlds. And so you've got to fight. You've got to really, like you said, to lay it down and go for a walk, you know, with your kids or go with your grandkids or swinging. Nobody's watching a video while I'm swinging those kids and they're knocking me over and laughing when they knock Papa over and all those kinds of things. You know, it's connection together. But again, that has to be intentional. You have to be focused on that and you have to really kind of seek to make that happen.
I think about Deuteronomy 6, which is, you know, a verse that we all love about children and faith. But what does it say? It's the practical things that we do in life, not the set aside things. It's as you walk, as you talk, as you get up, as you lay down. Yep. Talk to your kids about me, about God, about the faith. Well, that means time. I mean, that means you got to be engaged with your family. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think the number one issue today is still that being intentional, being engaged, being focused. There seems to be more distractions, but I don't know. Mm. If there is more, it's a new world, but it's still the same challenges. Now, Rodney, you do see more couples living together. That's been an issue in our culture.
Yeah, I started my pastoral counseling job at our church outside of Nashville on January 1 of 2000 when I began that. So that's been a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And I've seen definitely an increase of couples cohabitating together that attend our church on a regular basis. When they come to me, though, and they want to know if they need to get married or if they should get married or if I'll marry them or whatever the issue is, and we talk about it, and I look at them, I'll say, you understand you've got the cart before the horse, you know, and you've got some things out of order here. Every time, they all admit that. You know, they understand that. Yeah. But it's still prevalent, though, and it's growing and growing still. And so we embrace the people that come that are living together, but we don't, you know, we don't condone the sin. And like I said, across the board, they understand that, you know. But we welcome them so that they can grow and learn more about how to live like Christ. And a lot of them come in my office wanting to rectify that situation.
And I do think the blended family issue, Rodney, I think, you know, you work a lot with blended families and those parenting issues.
The step-family situation. Yes.
And it's interesting because what you're talking about is at the core of it is the heart. I mean, when I counsel couples in very similar situations who ask to come to get married, ask me to marry them, I'll sit with them and I'll get to the heart of the issue. And a lot of times the heart of the issue is there's a lack of trust. Mm-hmm. In a lot of cases, it's her feeling like he's not stepping up to the plate or that kind of thing. And you get to this and her wanting to do that, but she's never felt good enough or you know, like she could voice it or that kind of thing. And so it's, you know, and I think whether even in marriage, a lot of times when Christy and I are having wonderful pillow talk conversations, it's because I'm not pursuing her heart in the way that I should be.
Oh, I love
you
that.
Know, and it's you know, the Bible says to guard your heart for this wellspring of life.
Right.
When we're married, we're one flesh. We have one heart together, and you know when you're not feeling close with each other.
Oh, you do.
And I realize a lot of times, and I've not done a great job of this, you know, recently, is just pursuing her heart. And I'm just really, you know, just getting back to that whole idea of what's really going on with your heart, and just that intentionality and that kind of thing. So,
and I wish the listeners could see you look at her right now, because yeah, really? That was a beautiful picture. Yeah. That is so well said. Because in that is you knowing her intimately and caring about her intimately, what she feels, what she thinks, her opinions. It brings life to people.
And I think I just getting vulnerable for a second. I know that in my brain, I know that I have a counseling degree. I work
You're
with
smart.
People. I know those things. But just like all of us, we live in a culture that pressures on work and productivity and especially for me, there's identity wrapped up in that and significance. And it's easy for that to grab my time, that you are not as intentional setting limits or setting boundaries and planning vacations and planning time together. And and so then what ends up happening is you start to feel the disconnect.
Oh, yes.
And you start to feel, and then you go, wait a minute. It doesn't even matter. I love Tim Keller said this one time, that your marriage can be going incredibly well and everything else around you could be a mess, but you step out into the world in strength. Mm-hmm. But the opposite is true. If your marriage is not going well, but everything else is going well, you step out in the world in weakness.
Oh, I love that.
And you feel that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what, even what you guys are talking about.
Yes.
That's the key to 40 years. I mean, it's pursuing the heart. When you guys look at each other and you see the joy in each other, it's evident. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, that was so good. Mm-hmm. I want to pause. That is so good. If our listeners don't get anything else but that, because I can say whatever success we've had outside of marriage goes back to the marriage. You know, I could not be in the role I am today without Rodney being my number one. He is my number one advocate. He knows me more than anyone else. He knows my insecurities, my vulnerabilities, and he's been the wind beneath my wings, if you will, a little cheesy line, but he's my number one prayer partner. But those intimate pillow talks that you just mentioned have made all the difference in the world. That's where the core, the strength. If the world caves in around you, you know, you'll have good days, bad days. You'll have success, you'll have failures.
Yeah.
You go back to the core. Your faith and your marriage, I mean, it is there no matter what. So you can face with courage, you know, many things. I remember, Rodney, you had ministry burnout at one time, and we faced that head on together.
She's very, very supportive of me through that. You were, yes.
Yeah. We did that. It was beautiful. So here we are.
Relate to that. Even just the ministry burnout, you know, and the getting back to the core.
Yes.
Exactly what you're saying. Getting back to core and being intentional with that. I want to just, as our time is running out, I want to hit two other areas. What were key ways that you discipled your girls? What were key ways that you guys, just in terms of being in ministry, maybe even just having to balance ministry with that, because there's, I'm sure, pressure. I know I feel some pressure sometimes with what we do and who our kids are and who they're becoming, like that pressure there. How did you guys disciple your kids well?
Oh, I think long before we knew there was a Deuteronomy 6, we were kind of living our lives in that direction, that God and the Lord, Jesus and his story and just the spiritual things were a part of our everyday conversation with our girls. You know, when they were real little, preschool, and we watched that sunset. And I've been a lot of places in this world, and I don't know that any sunset's pretty than Middle Tennessee at times. I mean, they're just gorgeous. And you know, girls look at that sunset, isn't that beautiful? You know, thank you, God. You know, God created that, didn't he? You know, thank you, God, for eyes to be able to see that. You know, that's just, you know, it just, I've said before that someone walking with the Lord, if they're truly, genuinely, humbly walking with the Lord, that'll spill over. And not, you know, not living a perfect life, but walking with the Lord, and spill over. And that's been our philosophy, to make sure that they knew that we had a spiritual home, one that was very comfortable talking about the things of the Lord and just very open about that. And so that evoked questions that they had about the Lord as well, you know. And it was just, that was a part of our ongoing dialogue. That was a part of it. I think we prayed every night. We prayed consistently with them. And we talked, we read to them. Sometimes we read some godly material to them. Didn't have the technical formal official family devotion every night or anything, but we prayed together though, and we talked. And sometimes, and our youngest Natalie was taking allergy shots when she was two, and she learned, got very familiar with needles, and now she's a physician's assistant. You know, she's given those shots. Now, you know, so, but for several years, our family prayed for her. Her healing from the allergies. She was allergic to almost everything, and our so we learned about the persistence of prayer through that. You know, it's just, again, it's just a situation we had that we were able to apply some spiritual principles to. So that's so it's kind of a nebulous kind of a approach to our to discipling our girls.
I remember reading a research about raising children of faith, and one of the things that stood out to me is children that are raised in families of authentic faith. That's just that natural, messy, you know, you pray together, you know, it's not formal, it's not a Sunday morning thing, it's a daily thing. The probability of your kids as adults having a strong faith is great. If you have a religious system that your faith is not authentic, your kids are going to be the first to see it.
Yeah.
I mean, they just are. And the probability of you, if you have that kind of home and faith, of your children not having a faith in an adult is very high, very high. Mm. It just, in fact, it's better for your child to be raised in a home where there's no faith at all than to be raised in a home where there's not an authentic faith. I just say that because that study just really stood out to me.
It's kind of that lukewarm concept.
That, we mean that when life is hard, you bring your kids into discussion. It's not that everything is just great and, you know, that you labor in prayer over things, that you take everything to the Lord in prayer. We one of the beautiful things to me now is watching my adult daughters raise their children and do some of the things that, you know, we had in our home. And they're just doing it in their home now. And I love that. Yeah. But making God and faith natural, you know, that as you walk, as you talk, as you're praying, as you're doing life, as things are good and bad, you celebrate when answered prayer, you take problems to God, you're reminding the kids that God has the plans for them. All of it's just natural. It flows. Mm. But I have to say this, Rodney's two daughters, my two daughters too, didn't even realize this, but I remember them saying, my father, Rodney, was in the Word of God every morning. Mm-hmm. And they said the images of Rodney with his Bible open in the Word are etched in their minds. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those, it was natural, but Rodney has been faithful, not legalistic, but faithful to be in the Word every morning. And my adult daughters today as mothers are now speaking those things, and that made such a huge impression that, you know, so we as parents, it's got to be an authentic faith, guys. Yes. We can't plaster this on. We can't use a verse a day. It's got to be real for us. Mm. And that will disciple our kids more than anything, our faith being authentic. And that means we've got to be, you know, we got to believe what we say we believe.
Oh. I remember driving them to school, and I did not like school when I was a kid. I was a very, very average student. It's just didn't like. So I was determined to make it very positive. We're singing songs and we're laughing like crazy going to school every day in grade school and stuff. When we get closer to the school, I'd say, "How can I pray for you today?" "Well, Dad, I got this test. You know, I've got this, that, and the other." And then one day, she was in seventh grade. Natalie turned to me, our younger daughter. You know, and she said, "And Daddy, how can I pray for you?" And it just floored me. I thought, she's got it, you know.
Yeah.
Wow. And so then we became mutual kind of prayer partners back and forth like that. And it was just a real blessing, you know, to do that. So
the other thing I'd add is your partnership with the church. I cannot imagine raising children without a church family. Mm. The church has had such an impact on our daughters. From children's ministry to youth ministry to mission trips, that partnership with the church and faith. You know, you've got to be connected to a church, and it's got to be a church that is real for you. It's not a Sunday morning thing. You're in it. We were in youth. You know, I did 3-year-old choir. I did mission trips. We did Bible studies. We had kids in our home. We did pizza parties. We went on mission trips. It was an active partnership, and that makes a huge difference. Just opening your home and doing ministry in life. It will disciple your children.
This has been, like, I've been in tears numerous times. Oh. I just so appreciate you two.
Oh, oh wow.
Thank you, Chrissy.
Oh, thank you. And I just cheer you guys on.
Mm-hmm.
One of the great joys in this season is pouring into young couples like you guys. That's what we feel our calling is. We step back to push you guys out. So,
oh, I love
blessings.
That.
Blessings.
Can I ask you one more thing?
Yes.
I want to follow up. So, as a mom, as a cheerleader of moms who's raised two daughters who are now raising their babies, what is something you could leave me and our listeners who are moms? What is an encouragement? Something that, what are you seeing maybe them, you know, when they start spinning out of, you know, with anxiety and worry? What is something that you see in them that you saw in yourself that maybe you could speak into us?
Well, I wish we had another hour.
I know.
You know what? We're going to have you guys back on in the next season, and we're going to, you're going to be like our staple mom and dad for this podcast.
Can we
love that.
We have declared that today.
Yeah, we would love that.
I'll answer quickly.
It's very hard, but I would say number one, you got to let go of perfectionism. You got to let it go. You've got to look at life in seasons. And the season of being a mom of young children in particular, because they're so demanding, is a joyful, wonderful, beautiful season. But you've got to readjust yourself. Your own, one of the biggest problems moms have, they put too much on them. They expect perfect. I'm going to have a perfect home. I'm going to be a perfect wife. I'm going to be, I mean, and you can't. You cannot do that. You got to lower your expectations. You've got to let some things go, narrow your life. You can't do everything. You'll wear yourself out. And I had a physician, a wonderful pediatrician who had been a minister, went back to school to be a doctor. And I'll leave it at this. He said to me, one of the great, holding this newborn baby, and I'm a perfectionist, A-driven kind of girl. And he looked
You're
at me.
You're speaking to one.
He looked at me and he said this, and it was forever etched, and it changed my parenting from day one. He said to me, let me tell you something. There's no college applications that's going to ask, when did your baby give up the bottle? When did your baby learn to walk? When did your baby learn to read? That is an adult issue. He said, the number one thing for your child is that you love them. It got me, because this mama would have been that kind of mama, and I let it all go. And learned that loving my child, and my child knowing that unconditional love is the best gift that I can give them. Your child's going to learn to read. They'll eventually be body trained. Yeah, I mean, it's just going to happen. That's why it's not on a college application, because they assume that. So I think for moms to say, you can do this. You can do this. Don't miss the joy of the season you're in right now. They will sleep over. They will learn to sleep all night. They will be potty trained. They will do that. Maximize the privilege you have of mothering in this season. Let go of perfect.
And this too shall pass.
It will pass.
The season will pass.
It will. Yeah.
The door
and
closes.
You've got decades in front of you that you can do some wonderful things, but not now.
Thank you guys so much.
And I feel like I just had a counseling session or something.
I hope it just cheered you up, girl.
Great.
Well,
you guys
will be back. We're going to do this again for sure. And you guys are going to be our staple mom and dad on the podcast.
For more information and resources, or to connect with us, go to drjoshandchristy.com and come find us on Facebook or Instagram at Dr. Josh and Christy.
And be sure to head over to iTunes and subscribe to the In This Together podcast. We'd love if you wrote a review. The more positive reviews we get, the more people learn about it. Tell a friend and be sure to send us ideas, thoughts, or questions you'd love for us to cover on the podcast.
It's an honor being in this together.
We'll see you next week.